File 18. I am more than grateful to fate that this problem came to my notice when I was still in Vienna, for if I had been in Germany at that time, I might easily have found only a superficial solution. If I had been in Berlin when I first discovered what an illogical thing this institution is, which we call Parliament, I might easily have gone to the other extreme and believed, as many people believed, and apparently not without good reason, that the salvation of the people and the empire could be secured only by re-strengthening the principles of imperial authority. Those who had this belief did not discern the tendencies of their time and were blind to the aspirations of the people. In Austria, one could not be so easily misled. There, it was impossible to fall from one error into another. If the Parliament were worthless, the Habsburgs were worse, or at least in the slightest degree better. The problem was not solved by rejecting the parliamentary system. Immediately the question arose, what then? To repudiate and abolish the Vienna Parliament would have resulted in leaving all power in the hands of the Habsburgs. For me, especially, that idea was impossible. Since this problem was especially difficult in regard to Austria, I was forced, while still quite young, to go into the essentials of the whole question more thoroughly than I otherwise should have done. The aspect of the situation that first made the most striking impression on me and gave me grounds for serious reflection was the manifest lack of any individual responsibility in the representative body. The Parliament passes some acts or decrees which may have the most devastating consequences, yet nobody bears the responsibility for it. Nobody can be called to account. For surely one cannot say that a cabinet discharges its responsibility when it retires after having brought about a catastrophe? Or can we say that the responsibility is fully discharged when a new coalition is formed or Parliament dissolved? Can the principle of responsibility mean anything else than the responsibility of a definite person? Is it at all possible, actually, to call to account the leaders of a parliamentary government for any kind of action which originated in the wishes of the whole multitude of deputies and was carried out under their orders or sanction? Instead of developing constructive ideas and plans, does the business of a statesman consist in the art of making a whole pack of blockheads understand his projects? Is it his business to entreat and coach them so that they will grant him their generous consent? Is it an indispensable quality in a statesman that he should possess a gift of persuasion commensurate with the statesman's ability to conceive great political measures and carry them through into practice? Does it really prove that a statesman is incompetent if he should fail to win over a majority of votes to support his policy in an assembly which has been called together as a chance result of an electoral system that is not always honestly administered? Has there ever been a case where such an assembly has worthily appraised a great political concept before that concept was put into practice and its greatness openly demonstrated through its success? In this world, is not the creative act of the genius always a protest against the inertia of the mass? What shall the statesman do if he does not succeed in coaxing the parliamentary multitude to give its consent to his policy? shall he purchase that consent for some sort of consideration? Or, when confronted with the obstinate stupidity of his fellow citizens, should he then refrain from pushing forward the measures which he deems to be of vital necessity to the life of the nation? Should he retire or remain in power? In such circumstances, does not a man of character find himself face to face with an insoluble contradiction between his own political insight on the one hand, and on the other, his moral integrity, or better still, his sense of honesty? Where can we draw the line between public duty and personal honour? Must not every genuine leader renounce the idea of degrading himself to the level of a political jobber? And on the other hand, does not every jobber feel the itch to play politics, seeing that the final responsibility will never rest with him personally, but with an anonymous mass which can never be called to account for their deeds? Must not our parliamentary principle of government by numerical majority necessarily lead to the destruction of the principle of leadership? Does anybody honestly believe that human progress originates in the composite brain of the majority and not in the brain of the individual personality? Or may it be presumed that for the future, human civilization will be able to dispense with this as a condition of its existence? But may it not be that today, more than ever before, the creative brain of the individual is indispensable? The parliamentary principle of vesting legislative power in the decision of the majority rejects the authority of the individual and puts a numerical quota of anonymous heads in its place. In doing so, it contradicts the aristocratic principle, which is a fundamental law of nature. But of course, we must remember that in this decadent era of ours, the aristocratic principle need not be thought of as incorporated in the upper 10,000. The devastating influence of this parliamentary institution might not easily be recognized by those who read the Jewish press, unless the reader has learned how to think independently and examine the facts for himself. This institution is primarily responsible for the crowded inrush of mediocre people into the field of politics. Confronted with such a phenomenon, a man who is endowed with real qualities of leadership will be tempted to refrain from taking part in political life, because, under these circumstances, the situation does not call for a man who has a capacity for constructive statesmanship, but rather for a man who is capable of bargaining for the favour of the majority. Thus, the situation will appeal to small minds and will attract them accordingly. The narrower the mental outlook and the more meagre the amount of knowledge in a political jobber, the more accurate is his estimate of his own political stock, and thus he will be all the more inclined to appreciate a system which does not demand creative genius or even high-class talent, but rather that crafty kind of sagacity which makes an efficient town clerk. Indeed, he values this kind of small craftiness more than the political genius of a Pericles. Such a mediocrity does not even have to worry about respectability for what he does. From the beginning, he knows that whatever be the results of his statesmanship, his end is already prescribed by the state. he will one day have to clear out and make room for another who is of similar mental caliber. For it is another sign of our decadent times that the number of eminent statesmen grows according as the caliber of individual personality dwindles. That caliber will become smaller and smaller the more the individual politician has to depend upon parliamentary majorities. A man of real political ability will refuse to be the beadle for a bevy of fookling cacklers, and they, in their turn, being the representatives of the majority, which means the dunder-headed multitude, hate nothing so much as a superior brain. For footling deputies, it is always quite a consolation to be led by a person whose intellectual stature is on a level with their own. Thus, each one may have the opportunity to shine in debate among such compeers, and above all, each one feels that he may one day rise to the top. If Peter be boss today, then why not Paul tomorrow? This new invention of democracy is very closely connected with a peculiar phenomenon which has recently spread to a pernicious extent, namely the cowardice of a large section of our so-called political leaders. Whenever important decisions have to be made, they always find themselves fortunate in being able to hide behind the backs of what they call the majority. In observing one of these political manipulators, one notices how he wheedles the majority in order to get their sanction for whatever action he takes. He has to have accomplices in order to be able to shift responsibility to other shoulders whenever it is opportune to do so. That is the main reason why this kind of political activity is abhorrent to men of character and courage, while at the same time it attracts inferior types. For a person who is not willing to accept responsibility for his own actions, but is always seeking to be covered by something, must be classed among the knaves and the rascals. If a national leader should come from that lower class of politicians, the evil consequences will soon manifest themselves. Nobody will then have the courage to take a decisive step. They will submit to abuse and defamation rather than pluck up courage to take a definite stand. And thus, nobody is left who is willing to risk his position and his career, if needs be, in support of a determined line of policy.